ladies and gentlemen, Jim Bohannon is not here tonight. The hardest working guy in talk radio deserves a little vacation time. So tonight and tomorrow night, you got the guest host, Holland Cook. I'm a pal of Jim's, and he was not only nice enough to invite me to sit in for him, but they even let me hand pick the guests. And this hour's guest is someone you might want to call in and talk to. He's with us here in studio for the entire hour. And you can speak with a high government official, Federal Communications Commissioner Robert McDowell. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show.
Well, thanks so much, Holland. And this is your debut as a talk show host, even though you've been in the business for a very long time. So I'm very honored to be your first guest.
Well, and I'm honored that you're here. But any big shot in Washington who's willing to come back into town at 10 o'clock for an hour, I consider a good sport.
Well, I don't know about Big Shot, but anyway, the rest of it, you're very welcome.
Now, for those of you listening on AM 570 WDOX in Raleigh, Commissioner McDowell is a Duke alum, and his name is a great answer to the kind of trivia question Washington loves, because you were the first Republican to be appointed to an independent agency by Democratic President Barack Obama.
Yes.
Congratulations on your second term, which you've just begun.
Thank you.
Originally appointed by President George W. Bush. And you will serve how long in this term?
These are five-year terms.
Commissioner McDowell's distinguished resume includes telecommunications industry, public service, and law. He has admitted to practice before, among other courts, the United States Supreme Court. But lest you typecast him as a high-powered Washington attorney, I can personally vouch that the commish knows his way around a radio station. And if you don't mind me sharing this, we met some time ago, 1985. When he was Rob the intern in the newsroom I managed here at WTOP in Washington. Clearly you've done well since.
Well, and the lesson out of all of this is be nice to your interns, because someday they may grow up to regulate you. Thank you for being so nice to me.
Well done. And now, first things first, many Americans know the Federal Communications Commission by virtue of Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunctions, Howard Stern faux pas, etc. Obviously, the scope of your agency is bigger than being the potty mouth police for radio and TV. What is the mission of the commission?
Well, it's actually pretty broad. So it sounds corny and trite, but what we do at the FCC actually touches the lives of every American. If you've ever made a phone call, if you've ever used your cell phone, if you've ever really gone on the internet, and certainly if you've ever listened to radio or watched television, what the FCC does affects you. And then some. There are medical devices that operate in the radio spectrum. So we manage the radio spectrum, except for the parts where the government is using it. That's the Department of Commerce that administers that. And we look for new spectrum that we can bring to the marketplace. And it's very, very exciting. Certainly the indecency, the potty mouth police, as you call us, that's a certainly important part of what we do. And that's, I think, what the average man on the street or woman on the street might think that is all we do. But it's actually, as a percentage of my time, is probably a very small part of what we do.
And when we say spectrum, there are a limited number of frequencies that are available for everything. AM, FM, TV, garage door openers, you mentioned medical equipment. So it is a finite natural resource that you're managing.
Absolutely. The spectrum, as we call those, are the airwaves, the radio waves, and it's that invisible rainbow in the sky, and there's different types of radio waves. So some frequencies are better for some purposes than others. And we just auctioned off last year, folks may be very well aware, maybe too aware, of the digital television transition, which thankfully has been coming to a close. That spectrum, the signals there can go a long distance and can penetrate buildings, so, and also carry a lot of information. So it makes it perfect for things such as two-way, broadband, wireless services. So there's a lot of opportunity there with the spectrum that we have available.
Strictly speaking, CBS does not actually own Channel 2 in Pittsburgh. Media General does not actually own Channel 10 in Providence. They get to use them. They own the building. They hire all the people. They get to sell commercials. But we really own all these channels, don't we?
The American people do. It's considered a natural resource, and it's just like a national park or a national forest or something along those lines. So stations or users of the network have licenses. There are some unlicensed users. So if you have a baby monitor at home, you're an unlicensed user of the spectrum, and you have to give way to licensed users. You have to yield the right of way, so to speak, just like on a road, but to the licensed users if they want to use that frequency. So there are some risks involved. But there's unlicensed use and licensed use. But at the end of the day, the American people own the airwaves.
And you are really making sure that only one person is talking at a time on one channel somewhere, kind of policing the interference that would otherwise exist. More so than you exist as censors, I get the impression that the FCC is reluctant about censoring programming content. It really is more about managing the real estate, isn't it?
It really is, in terms of what we do over the airwaves. And certainly, broadcasters who have those licenses are subject to a federal statute regarding indecent airing. But folks on cable and satellite are not subject to that, and certainly not the internet. But we manage the real estate, to use your words. We also, in the phone side of things, the telephone, telecommunications, internet side of things, we are sometimes managing competition issues between market players, between competitors in the marketplace, and trying to find that right atmosphere where we're going to foster competition, hopefully.
So you're really the censor of last resort, aren't you?
Well, I don't like to use the word censorship, but certainly it can be used that way. Right, exactly. You know, political speech we can talk about here in a few minutes, but that's very important to me. But certainly Congress has said that keeping the airwaves clean of certain language between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. is of compelling interest. And children might be listening during those hours, for instance, a little different from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Broadcasters have more leeway in terms of the content they can air. But we want to keep it clean for when children might be listening.
And entirely different than, for instance, HBO. In order to get The Sopranos, you had to really opt in. You had to give them a Visa card. It won't just pop on in the car. So you're less involved in a closed system like that.
Exactly. When we look at the First Amendment actually says Congress shall make no laws, you know, abridging the freedom of speech. But actually, Congress can make some laws, is what the Supreme Court has said, to abridging the freedom of speech, if there's a compelling interest. So, but when it's a service where you pay to get that content, like cable TV or satellite, the courts sort of look at that to say, well, you're actually choosing to receive that content. So
right.
It's like a magazine subscription or something.
Gotcha.
And you are assuming the risk of maybe there being something there that you don't like. And you can always cancel your subscription. You can always turn it off if it's TV or radio. So there's a different constitutional standard for that, the courts have held over the years, than there is for broadcast radio. If you're in your car and your child is in the back seat, you're considered sort of a captive audience. And there are a lot of other angles, legal angles around that as well.
If airwave spectrum is finite, the internet seems almost infinite. What jurisdiction does the FCC have over what's on the internet?
Well, we don't really regulate content over the internet. Certainly, the internet is sort of the wild, wild west in terms of content in a lot of ways. There are some restrictions, for instance, pornography, obviously child pornography,
mm-hmm.
Illegal. So the U.S. Attorney's Office, Department of Justice might oversee that. There might be deceptive trade practices that go on over the internet. So the Federal Trade Commission might be in charge of that. But we are not, to use your word, censors of the internet in that regard. We don't have any jurisdiction in terms of the content.
Okay, in studio with us for the entire hour is FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell. It's the Jim Bohannon Show. Get free personalized financial advice for every step of the loan process with the Loan Coach. Start now with the all-new LendingTree.com, 1-800-555-TREE. Holland Cook for Jimbo. We'll be right back. It's the Jim Bohannon Show, but no Jimbo tonight. He's on vacation. I'm Holland Cook. Tomorrow night in this hour, what Washington doesn't get about America, what America doesn't get about Washington, and your chance to send Congress a message they will hear. And in this hour, in studio for the entire hour, Federal Communications Commission Commissioner Robert McDowell, and your chance to ask or tell the commish anything about radio or TV or what the heck all these charges on your phone bill are, 1-866-50-JIMBO. That's 866-505-4626. We're going to go to Horsehead, New York. And Bodan, did I pronounce your name right?
Just close enough. Mr. McDowell, if I may sort of shoot a volley at you. To what extent, if any, has the FCC been politicized? And then a following question would be, how would that interact with the free speech battle that's going to be coming on? And then if I may follow up on that.
Sure. Excellent question. So, first of all, most folks don't know the FCC is what we call an independent administrative agency. We're not part of the executive branch. We're not part of the legislative branch. Although the five commissioners are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, the statute says that the president's party can only have three out of the five. It doesn't say what the other two have to be, but they have to work that out with the opposite party in the Senate. So we all serve different terms that are staggered. So we all have five-year terms, and it's rare for someone to actually start their term on time and finish on time. So they're staggered so that you don't have absolutely nobody on the FCC at any given point in time. So right there, the first part of your question, is it politicized? Sure, in that you're appointed by a politician and you are confirmed by 100 politicians in the Senate.
It's not unusual for commissioners to have worked on presidential campaigns, for instance.
It's not, or on the Hill, on Capitol Hill, with senators in particular. So there are a lot of folks who've had that on their resume, including myself. So there is the politics of that, but the way Congress set this back up in 1934, which is when the FCC is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year, by the way, is to try to insulate it somewhat from the political winds, in that the president can't fire us. We can be impeached by the Senate. That takes 66 votes, and I'm knocking on wood if I can find any. That hasn't happened yet, and hopefully won't. So we are somewhat insulated from that process, and the five-year term means you span more than one presidential election cycle and several House of Representatives of election cycles. So that gives you some autonomy, and I firmly believe that the five commissioners should be independent in terms of their voice, small I, independent, and we're an independent administrative agency. You should follow the statute and do what you think is best in the public interest.
Will the FCC interfere with the Internet?
We would, first of all, have to have congressional authorization to do that. And then that would be surely challenged in court on First Amendment grounds. I sense from the wording of your first set of questions your concern about protecting free speech, and that's a concern of mine as well. Right now, also, you asked, so there are going to be, as of next week, three Republicans and two Democrats will have the first full FCC since about January 5th of this year, where we had a couple of retirements and people rolled
off. Thank you very much, sir.
Sir, thank you.
Has that slowed things down in terms of backlog of license applications and all?
Most of what the FCC handles in terms of volume is handled by our career. These are career government employees, so the career system. If you have radio license that needs renewing, that's handled by career employees at the FCC. So the answer there is no. But the five commissioners vote on new policies and new rules. And so anything that's sort of novel or new, we have to vote on. And, of course, that all has to be within our statutory guidelines and mandates as well as the Constitution.
Well, let's go to Pittsburgh. Beth is listening to us, I'll bet, on KDKA. Am I right?
Yes.
And what is your question for Commissioner McDowell?
It's removed from what you were speaking of, but does the FCC control the sounds, the level of, I guess it's called decibels, I'm not really sure, but it seems like anymore that the commercials are like, you know, break your ears and you go back to regular broadcasting when a commercial is over. I mean, you have to turn your volume down three or four notches just to be able to control it. Is that an FCC regulation?
It is not, really, and there is legislation that's been introduced by Congresswoman Anna Eshoo from California that addresses this. Broadcasters, of course, are resisting it and want to try to work that out on their own, but we don't have the authority right now, really, to address that.
It does seem like they presume you've left for the kitchen, and they want you to hear the commercial anyway.
That's right.
Hey, you mentioned the digital TV transition earlier. When I was calling your office to invite you on the show, I called the FCC's main number, and it says, "Thank you for calling the DTV hotline and the FCC." It was that big. How did it go in retrospect?
Overall, I think it went pretty well. Certainly, there are still some folks left behind, maybe a million households or so that are still not connected. But right before the June 12th deadline, it was estimated that over 3 million households were unprepared. We cut that number in half 2 weeks after the June 12th deadline. And actually, coupons expire, or the coupon program expires altogether July 31st. So if folks still need a coupon, they can call 1-888 DTV 2009 and order their coupons for their converter boxes. And if you're listening to your radio and don't have a TV that's working because you didn't get converted, you better hurry up and go to your electronics retailer and buy a box.
Well, many viewers seem only to have confronted the transition when the old channels actually disappeared. You know, we're all busy mentally, and no matter how many announcements you run on TV, it's only when they disappear, when your TV stops working, that you really confront this. Why, again, did we need to change to the new channels TV has moved to?
Excellent question. So, first of all, Congress said so. They passed a law thing, so I like to follow the law. They passed this law because through the advancements in technology, if broadcasters broadcast using digital technology, they use a lot less of those airwaves. So if you can imagine in your mind, it takes, let's say, a foot of the airwaves to broadcast in the old analog way. It took maybe an inch to broadcast in digital. And that meant that actually also broadcasters had more power, more things they could do with that one inch because computers are using digital and it's more powerful. At the same time, that left over, let's say, the other 11 inches, just hypothetically, of airwaves for other things like that two-way wireless broadband technology we were talking about earlier. And Congress had auctioned that off so we can get up to maybe six new wireless players per market, companies that could come into your area that are new, that could offer new services.
There's as many cell phones as people in America now, right?
Just about.
They got to go somewhere.
The market's almost saturated. That's true.
That's what's going to become of the old channels.
Also, other things such as public safety. We're trying to work on a nationwide interoperable broadband public safety and homeland security network that's sort of bedeviled us for a while as to how to actually get that built without public funds. But for consumers, it's going to be a big plus. It's really going to change our lives. And these are coming over the horizon. These networks aren't built out yet, but you know, wait 5 or 10 years, and it's going to be amazing.
I'm told there's a green aspect to this, too, that the new digital TV transmitter uses less electricity than the old one did.
That's true. Digital is more efficient all around. It's more powerful and more efficient, and so you do use less electricity.
In-studio guest, a real big shot, a high government official, Commissioner Robert McDowell from the Federal Communications Commission, for your questions or comments at 1-866-50-JIMBO. That's 1-866-505-4626. The Jim Bohannon Show with Holland Cook sitting in for Jim tonight and tomorrow night is brought to you by Acura. Acura Advance. We'll be back with Commissioner McDowell shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, the Jim Bohannon Show sends Jimbo, who is on vacation. I'm Holland Cook sitting in. Our in-studio guest for the entire hour is FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell. We were talking a minute ago about the digital TV transition, and I have heard from folks who got the new antenna and are receiving the signal over the air that it's not as big a footprint as the old analog signal might have been. Are you hearing this from folks?
The vast majority of people are actually receiving more signals than they did before, but there are some who are receiving fewer. So the digital footprint is sometimes a little bit different from the old analog footprint. And we're working on that at the commission and trying to make sure that everyone who received their favorite TV station can still do that. And but it becomes a matter of which station's interfering with another station and a bunch of engineering stuff. And we have to do that very carefully, and that's going to take some time.
Let's go to Janet, who is one of my neighbors in Rhode Island in Providence. I'm thinking you're listening to WHJJ, am I right?
You're right.
And what is your question or comment for Commissioner McDowell?
Well, the TV conversion, maybe you just answered it, but before the conversion, I had over a dozen stations from Boston and from Rhode Island and all over. And now, with a converter box, I have two, and it just doesn't seem very good care of the poor people and the senior citizens that can't afford to have cable.
Let me make a suggestion. First of all, call 1-888 call FCC. I'll repeat that. 1-888-CALL-FCC. You're in Rhode Island, where the signal should be strong almost everywhere. It's fairly flat, good reception qualities there, and you're not too far away from a transmitter because you're in tiny Rhode Island, so that's good. You may have lost a couple of your stations, but there also could be an antenna issue for you or something to do with your box. So call tomorrow morning during business hours, and a technician will walk you through, and maybe you can pick up more stations that way.
Let's go to Bismarck, North Dakota. Lauren, you're on the air on the Jim Bohannon Show.
You talked about the airwaves belonging to the public which I think is an excellent point. I believe they do, and yet we're talking about auctioning off spectrum, and they have. And are these so-called auctions of spectrum, are these for a finite amount of time? I mean, how can you auction off something that doesn't belong to, I mean, it belongs to the public. It, like you say, it'd be auctioning off Yellowstone Park. You know, it doesn't seem right.
Well, the money from the auction goes where?
Right to the U.S. Treasury.
It's like you don't sell it. It's like, I don't care where the money goes. It's not a commodity to be sold.
Well, somebody's coming to use it, though.
Well, it's a license, actually. You're absolutely right, sir. We're not selling the airwaves. We're selling them for a fixed term, and they can be reviewed and given to others if the folks don't live up to their commitment.
Let's talk to John in Daytona Beach, Florida. You're with Commissioner Robert McDowell from the FCC.
Are you aware of that study that came out about 4 years ago linking pornography as being worse than heroin in addiction?
I'm not familiar with that particular one, but that doesn't surprise me. There are a lot of people addicted to it, and it's very sad.
What's being done to curb pornography?
Well, first of all, over the airwaves at the FCC, pornography is not allowed, period, paragraph, and the Supreme Court has upheld that. Pornography could be allowed over cable and certainly over the Internet. Certain types of pornography is not allowed, child pornography, for instance. So there's varying degrees of First Amendment protection there, and obviously the parts of pornography that are considered the most harmful, the courts and law enforcement officials and Congress over the years have regulated very tightly.
There is a natural tension between the First Amendment and the reality that there are kiddos in the car.
Exactly.
Question about radio. Radio has changed a lot since it was deregulated back in 1996, and at that point, the limit on the number of stations any one company owned were raised. That gave way to a seller's market for radio stations, during which independent mom-and-pop type owners sold out to big companies at sky-high prices, and the big companies ended up leveraged to the hilt, and they had to cut a lot of costs, and that meant cutting a lot of employees. And the critics suggest that radio is less local now, and I know the FCC did a series of town meetings on ownership and got an earful about this. Admittedly, 96 was before your time, when the genie got out of the bottle. Is there any putting it back in?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. After the 1996 Act, the number of radio stations one company could own in a particular market, depending on the size of the market, was increased. And there was a period of media consolidation, as it's called. So a lot of companies got bigger, Clear Channel, CBS, a lot of them.
Citadel,
Disney, a lot of them started buying up radio stations. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, actually, they started selling them off. So we've actually seen media divestiture or media deconsolidation here in the past 4 or 5 years. So you've seen Belo, Citadel, Clear Channel, CBS all selling off their radio and sometimes TV stations as well. And right now, actually, broadcasters are really taking it on the chin, a double whammy.
The
economy,
recession. Yeah.
Right, a hard economy. And, you know, sometimes local stations rely on about a third of their ad revenue to come from car dealerships, and we know how those are going.
Ouch.
Then there's new media. There's the Internet, satellite radio, satellite TV. So eyeballs and ears are more and more increasingly looking to new media, and so the ad dollars are following those people as they listen and watch to the new media. And that's also hitting broadcasters pretty hard. So they actually, broadcasters have more of an incentive now to be hyper-local, to differentiate their product from the national and international internet than ever before.
They can barely afford employees, though, because they've had to cut so much cost because of the big mortgage. Stations are selling for less than they used to. Do you think that there's an opportunity for a new wave of mom and pop as the big companies are in a pickle?
Absolutely. As these stations have been sold off, I think it's actually a great buying opportunity. The biggest obstacle to mom and pop buying it, however, is access to capital. And right now, the capital markets, if you want to get a loan, or just pony up your own bucks or your rich uncle's bucks or whatever the case might be, the capital markets are so tight right now, it's very, very difficult. So first, I think we have to wait for the economy to turn around a little bit, and that will hopefully make it more attractive to mom and pop. But mom and pop also can try to go into new media at the same time.
Jason in Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're on the Jim Bohannon Show with FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Great.
It's like a two-part question, I guess. My first question is, what's the relationship the FCC takes on mediating between broadcasters and cable or satellite carriers. And then the second part would be in an instance of when a broadcaster tries to force carriers to put them on certain lineups or so on, what's FCC's take on that?
Excellent questions, both of them. So you're in the advanced section of the class, I can tell. So we do have sections of the statute that govern this, and there's sort of two areas there. One is if a broadcaster wants to get onto a local cable network, for instance, what are their opportunities there? And there are a couple of avenues for them. And, yes, there's a complaint process at the FCC. The other area is, of course, if you are producing programming and you want that programming if a cable operator has programming that they produce and you want that programming for your own purposes, how do you get access to that? And there's a complaint process for that as well. So, and then when broadcasters, you're talking about something called retransmission consent, and I don't want to torpedo the Jim Bohannon Show's ratings by getting into the intricacies of that, but that is another method by which broadcasters, if they have compelling content, let's say they're a network affiliate and they carry the Super Bowl or something, that cable company really wants to carry the Super Bowl, and under the statute as voted on by Congress, there's a way for that to happen. And increasingly, we see cable companies having to pay larger and larger cash payouts to the broadcasters in order to get that kind of content.
Hey, if you want iPhone, you have to be on AT&T, and I gather that there's a bit of a flap roiling about that, because I'm on Verizon. I wouldn't mind staying on Verizon. It's good where I live, but there's nothing wrong with iPhone being exclusive to that carrier, right?
Absolutely, and it's an important part of getting those new gadgets, those new phones to market.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we'll be right back with FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell on the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Holland Cook. Stick around. Oh, it's the Jim Bohannon Show, all right, but even the untrained ear will recognize these not to be the pear-shaped tones of Jimbo, who is on vacation. I'm Holland Cook, flattered by the presence of FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell, who's in studio with us. And if this was TV, you would have seen his eyes light up a minute ago when I mentioned iPhone. And, geez, I'd love one, but I'm on Verizon, and it's on AT&T. What's the story?
Obviously, this issue came about as a result of the iPhone. Everyone wanted the iPhone, but unless you're an AT&T subscriber, you couldn't get it. So there's one argument that says for these wonderful new whiz-bang phones and gadgets, really it's your PC on your hip, you know, or in your pocket. It does more than just a phone. People want to be able to buy that regardless of who their cell phone carrier is. So they want to be able to do that. But there's another argument that says the iPhone wouldn't have happened unless they had an exclusive deal, sort of a guaranteed commitment from AT&T to bring X amount, you know, X million of those to market. So they had a guaranteed revenue stream there. In the meantime, there are 33 or so manufacturers of cell phones in the U.S., and over 600 devices available to consumers. So we are considering putting out what's called a notice of proposed rulemaking to allow public comment on this exact issue, and when and if we do that, and the new chairman of the FCC says we will do that, I invite everyone listening to file comments. You can go to www.fcc.gov when that happens and file comments very easily that way.
All you Verizon customers got that, right? FCC.gov. Speaking about technology pioneers, when Sirius and XM Satellite Radio were originally granted their licenses, they were separate companies, and the commission's intent was that they compete so the consumer would benefit. And since then, Howard Stern got his hundreds of millions of dollars to flee what he called FCC censorship. And ultimately, the FCC granted a merger that joined both companies because they were crying poverty. Historically, though, hasn't the commission given pioneers a little slack?
Pioneers have gotten a little slack over time. We call those pioneers preference, or we try to test out a new technology or a new use of a frequency, a part of the airwaves, to see what they can do with it. And so we give them some leeway there. In that particular instance, I looked at that merger as the audio marketplace is much more competitive than it's ever been before. It's not just radio anymore. It's iPods. It's the Internet. It's a lot of things. So it wasn't just a merger going from 2-1. It was just that one platform against many, many others.
Now, when you're an FCC commissioner, do you get a badge?
You do, actually. I'll show it to you here with a mind's eye of radio.
We'll take a picture of that for the website. Raymond in Michigan. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show. What have you got for Commissioner McDowell?
I think back to 9/11, and I was at work, and all we had was radio, and I ran home, seen it on TV, and went back and told them about it. And then when the Gulf War broke out, I was sitting at a bar with a bunch of friends of mine, and they were talking about, you know, gas and nuclear weapons. I said, you don't need it. All you need is a Scud missile to go high enough there, and that would take out all of our satellites, just a solar flare. My question is, how far have you guys gone to talk to Homeland Security to ensure that, you know, we will be informed? I mean, without cable or satellite, where would that leave us? Just radio?
Well, excellent question. And first of all, in 2006, the FCC created, for the first time, a new bureau, the Homeland Security and Public Safety Bureau, to look into just these issues. And I just met our new chief of that bureau, who's a former admiral of the U.S. Navy, Jamie Barnett, and he and I talked about what do we do to make sure the public can continue to get vital news and information during things such as maybe a pandemic, not just a terrorist attack. And first of all, yeah, the satellites, it's going to be hard to take out all of them, but certainly some of our friends in the international community, or not our friends, actually, are busy messing with our satellites over time.
Hackers.
And things like that, yeah, flashing them with lasers and things to try to disable them. So this is a concern. But I wouldn't lose sleep over it just now. There are a lot of what we call redundancies, a lot of duplicate efforts to convey information to you. There's the Internet, which tends to be terrestrial or Earth-based, wires and wireless, and a lot of new platforms. We've tried to open up the opportunity for the construction of new delivery platforms through that TV spectrum we were talking about and other parts of the airwaves to get you your news and information.
Jeff in Lake of Ozark, Missouri. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show.
We tried to get rid of TV last year during football season. That probably wasn't a very good idea. We left it for about a month and then fired it back up when Missouri and Kansas played. But my question is, I haven't paid much attention, but if I want to get rid of satellite completely and go with the digital, I guess it would be, what do I do to go about doing that?
Sure. So you're talking about television, of course, here for folks who are listening. So what you can do is go to your favorite electronics retailer or order online a digital converter box. And that will convert the new digital signals back into an old analog signal that your old analog TV can understand, or you can go out and buy a digital TV. And a subset of digital, of course, is high definition. They're not exactly the same, but you have to have a digital tuner in your TV in order to have a high definition reception.
And one of the purposes, you know, I want to, in this economy, try to cut down on the bills. Now, is that free, or what does that cost, and how many TVs can be serviced off one box? Do I have to have an antenna?
You have to have an antenna, and actually call 1-888-DTV-2009. You can still do that by July 31st to get two $40 coupons per household and get your box subsidized that way. And yes, you can run more than one TV off a box if you have a splitter, but that's getting into the advanced section of the class.
Right back momentarily with FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell, Holland Cook on the Jim Bohannon Show. The Jim Bohannon Show, what a treat to get the guest hosted. I'm Holland Cook, and what a treat to have FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell with us. Recently, you made headlines in the radio trade press saying something we're not accustomed to hearing from high government officials. You said that the government's collecting too much money. By your count, maybe, what, $20 million? What's that about?
Maybe even more. That's right. So the FCC actually is one of the few agencies that makes money for the American taxpayer. We charge the companies we regulate fees, administrative fees, application fees, and that's in addition to the money we collect from spectrum auctions last year, $20 billion. Congress does give us money, but we end up paying it back. So we run the agency in about, I don't know, $320 million or so. I think that's gone up recently, but yeah, roughly $300 some odd million. But for that money, you get $20 billion back. So these fees we charge, though, go into the Treasury directly, not into our bank account. And we continue to collect those fees even after we have met our budget for the year. And those companies that we regulate end up passing those fees along to consumers. So this is a tax of sorts, and I think we need to try to be as revenue neutral as possible, especially when folks are having a hard time paying their mortgage, let alone taxes.
Being where they are, sure.
Exactly. So I've asked the chairman to look into that, and he said he would, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Possibly the best-known, perhaps notorious, commissioner of all time, appointed by John F. Kennedy in 1961, Newton Minow, who said before the National Association of Broadcasters that year, when television is good, nothing. not the theater, not the magazines or newspapers. Nothing is better. But when television is bad, nothing is worst. And he called TV a vast wasteland, and we've heard this for years. Fast forward to present day, and a jilted girlfriend from a reality show about dating is then picked up by a reality show about Dancing with the Stars.
That's right.
What are your favorite TV shows?
Oh, my goodness, you're going to put me on the spot. You know, I'm an FCC commissioner. I have to watch everything, right? So that's what people think.
You're
I sit around all day watching every channel. I have a very busy schedule. I end up watching a lot of news, first of all. I'll watch some stuff with my kids. I have three young kids, and so I watch a lot of kid TV, actually, just to see what's out there for them. It's hard for me to get hooked on a series like a 24 or Lost, where you have to kind of watch it every week to figure out what's going on, because you have to watch it every week, and I can't do that. So.
But even people who don't watch it watch CSI Miami when they get HDTV.
That's true, and they can use their DVR as well.
Hey, Commissioner Robert McDowell from the FCC, thank you so much for being with us. It's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Holland Cook. Stick around. This is Westwood One.